Well, my talk will be about the last result we have obtained very recently in the National Orbit of Human Therapy. As we know, in the last years, the improvement of computer hardware and software have allowed the simulation of molecules with an increasing number of atoms. From the computational point of view, we have in the, on one side a very accurate method based on the n part of the wave function, but with a high computational cost for large systems. And on the other side, we have the most efficient method, the density functional theory. And practical implementation of the density functional theory are mainly based on the Kong-Chang formulation, in which the kinetic energy is not constructed as a function of the density, but rather from an auxiliary slated determinant. We know that there is some problem with the Kong-Chang formulation in this thing, and probably the correlation kinetic energy is the main source of this problem. Maybe a direction for improving this thing lies in the development of a functional theory based on the one particle related density method rather than on the density itself. There are two major advantages of the one particle reduced density matrix formulation. The first one, we know that like density, the one particle reduced density matrix is a much simpler object than the n particle wave function, and the necessary and sufficient conditions for the energy representability of the one particle reduced density matrix are well known and easily implementable. The other major advantage is that the kinetic energy is explicitly defined and does not require the construction of functional. It remains only to find approximation for the electromagnetic potential function. This is the line of the presentation. I will give at the beginning a very brief introduction to the National Orbit of Functional Theory. Then I will give the main ideas of our reconstructed functional. Thirdly, some results will be presented. And finally, some closing remarks will be given. Well, in general, we will work with an air particle and an electron molecule. So, for these systems, the Hamiltonian only have one and two particles operator. Then, the energy is an explicit non-functional of the one and two particle resistance density matrix. In the following, I will refer to the one matrix only as a one matrix, and for the two particle resistance density matrix as a two matrix. H here represents the matrix element of the core Hamiltonian, and the brackets denote the two electron interactions. Okay, let's replace the lax term in the energy, which is a functional of the two matrix, by a non-functional of the one matrix. And the existence of this functional is provided by the constraining CH formulas. So in this way, we can the energy becomes a functional of only the one matrix for a given number of particles. On the other hand, we also know that the one particle resistance density matrix can be diagonalized by a unitary transformation of the spin orbitals. The eigenfunctions are called the spin natural orbitals, and the eigenvalues are the corresponding occupation number of these orbitals. In the following, we refer only to this representation, so the energy becomes now a functional of the occupation numbers, the natural orbitals, for a given number of elements. Let's focus now on the energy representability problem. We know that not every one matrix and two matrices are possible to obtain from the n particle wave function, but we must ensure that the reduced density matrix are derived from the n particle wave function. By fortune, in 1963, Coleman found the necessary and sufficient condition for this energy representability of the one matrix. That is, the occupation number must be in the range between 0 and 1. But, however, for the two metrics, there is not a simple set of sufficient conditions for the representability of these metrics. Then, it will be very difficult to approximate the electron-electron potential energy functional. This is a corollary we have, that any approximation for this electron-electron potential energy functional by means of a reconstructed functional dead gamma must comply at least with the non-necessary condition for the energy representability of the two matrix, the so-called positivity conditions. These conditions state that the two electron, the two hole and the electron hole density matrix have to be positive semi-defined. Okay, let's analyze now the spin structure of the 1 and 2 matrices. We know that our Hamiltonian does not contain any spin coordinate, so both the spin operators commute with Hamiltonian, and they have common eigenfunctions. On the other hand, the spin orbitals are direct products of the spatial and spin functions, and then we can split the spin orbitals into two subsets, the alpha and beta set. And besides, the spin contamination effects can be straightforwardly avoided by the use of a single set of orbital phi. It's not difficult to demonstrate that for the eigenfunction of the projection of the spin, only the density matrix blocks that conserve the number of each spin type are not vanishing. So for the one matrix, we have only 2 independent blocks, and for the two matrices, we have 3 independent blocks. In this slide, I showed the expectation value for the projection of the spin is equal to the difference between the number of alpha and beta electrons, and for the total spin, this expectation value is related to the spin blocks of the two matrices. Taking into account the spin blocks, independent spin blocks of both matrices, we arrive at this equation for the energy. Here we have introduced this notation for the spinless two matrices. Okay, at this point, let me say what are the main ideas of our reconstructive function. I will introduce now the important concept of the cumulative matrix. We know that the two matrices can be partitioned into an independent probe, anti-symmetricized probe of the one matrix, which is the simple Hartree-Fock approximation, and so. And some lambda, some correction to this decomposition. This lambda is the so-called Cuban matrix or the pericorrelation matrix. If we take into account this decomposition for the two matrix, we can arrive at this expression for the energy. The three first terms are related to the Hartree-Fock approximation, and the last one is defined by the spinless Cuban matrix. For the total value of the spin, we have to find the spin component alpha beta for the cumulative matrix. Now, how to approximate this cumulative matrix? Okay, I will approximate this cumulative matrix by means of 2 index matrices, delta and pi. From the, I don't have no time, but from the cumulative properties, we obtain that this delta spin component for the delta matrix has to be real symmetric matrices and have to satisfy these some rules. On the other hand, analogously, we can obtain that pi matrix is a spin independent emitter matrix. Then, if we find in some way how to put these two matrices as a function of the occupation numbers, the approximate cumulant leads to this natural orbital function. The first term is the kinetic and reflection terms. The second term is contain this Hoover interval, and the third term the change interval. But we see now in the last term a new interval, the L interval. This interval arises from the correlation between particles with opposite spins, and is defined by this interval I showed here in this slide. We can rewrite in a convenient form, introducing 2 new operators, the PM. R operator. The P operator is the typical permutation operator, but the R operator is a new operator, the time inversion, commutator, and unitary operator, which essentially changes an alpha electron into a beta electron and vice versa. This is why we call this L interval the change and time inversion interval. Now I have to find some approximation for the delta and the pi matrix. I will begin with the delta matrix and with the spin compensating system, comparing with the singlet state. For singlet state, we know that the both spin operators have potential values equal to 0. We have the same number of alpha and beta electrons, and the diagonal elements of the delta matrix are equal to the square of the occupation number for a given spatial orbital, and for the pi matrix, it will be equal to the occupation number in this spatial orbital. This is a consequence of the spin conserving rule, and we return to this point in a few slides. Moreover, we can simplify the expression for the singlet case. If we consider real orbitals, because for these orbitals, the change and time inversion integral is equal to the change integral, and our expression for the energy becomes a functional of with only GK only dependence. Okay? From CI, Y functions, it was a long time ago obtaining the exact expression for the energy in the two electron case, and it could be, of course, the starting point for our approximate functional. We can rewrite equivalently this expression for the energy using our rotations, and then we obtain that the alpha and beta components of the delta matrix is equal just to the product of the occupational numbers, and for the prime matrix, we obtain this formula for expression to express the matrix element of the matrix. We see that even for this simplest case of the two electron systems, this matrix requires a distinction between the orbitals. Here we see a negative sign and here a positive sign, depending if the orbitals are below or above the Fermi level. Then we move to the system with the number of electrons greater than 2, but unfortunately, we cannot use the functional form of the delta matrix because it violates the Sund rule for its components when the number of electrons is greater than 2. So the only thing we have are these inequalities, which are boundaries obtained from the D and Q positivity condition for the two metrics. And in principle, one may approximate in the case of the number of electrons greater than 2, the diagonal elements of delta in terms of the occupation numbers considered the Sund rule and the analytic constraint imposed by the D and Q condition. We have done this, and we have found, I have no time to enter into the details, but we have found that the off-diagonal element which guarantee from the observed the energy preservability constraints and the Sund rule can be given by this formula. Essentially, they are product of the holes and the occupation number, and sometimes appears this coefficient, which depends on the sum SF. This sum is the number of holes below the Fermi level, or the sum of all of the occupation numbers above this Fermi level. This is a consequence. It's very easy to obtain from the trace of the Wang matrix. So now, let's analyze the spin of compensated system. For these systems, the spin is different from zero. Now, the number of particles is equal to the sum of the number of alpha and beta electrons. These are the sum rule for the different components of the delta matrix. And we have to recall that in this case, there are 2s plus 1 energy degenerate spin multiplied states. We will focus only on the high spin multiplied state, that is, when the projection of the spin is equal to the maximum possible value S. We further assume that the number of particles of alpha, the number of electrons with alpha spin are greater or equal to the number of beta electrons. Then now the NP represents the spin compensating part of the for each special orbital, and M represents the excess of the alpha electron in this special orbital. Accordingly, they have to satisfy these two constraints, the first one related to the trace of the Wang matrix, and the second one related to the spin value. We have obtained very recently, for the high spin multiplied state, the expectation value for the total spin is given by this formula, this expression, and obviously, the conservation of the total spin implies this Sund rule. This Sund rule can be further simplified if we use our reconstruction formula for the alpha beta cumulant, and then we obtain this simple expression for the diagonal elements of the delta and pi matrix. These two expressions for the diagonal elements are our spin concentric rule under our assumptions. Again, we can consider only real orbitals and the change integral are equal. The energy functional at this expression. We see the four first terms are related to the spin compensating part, like in similar case. And we obtain two new terms. This one is for the interaction between the spin compensating part and the spin compensated part. And this is the last one is for the spin uncompensated part only. Okay, again, I have no time, but we can obtain the expression for the delta matrix of the different components. I show here the alpha beta component of the delta matrix. This is generalization of the expression obtained before. We see now, if you look carefully, two new Fermi level for the beta and alpha electrons and two muons. They are very similar, similar meaning, like the SF and F. And we know that previous separation reduced to the formula obtained from spin compensating system if we take spin equals zero and mod m equals zero too. Now, finally, I will analyze the pi matrix. Because the pi matrix is a spin-independent matrix, we have no difference between the pi matrix for the multiple case and for the singlet. Up to now, we have approximated this pi matrix using the expression obtained for the two-electron system and including a new term when the number of particles is greater than two. This product of the occupational number have been introduced to cancel the term in the energy which contains the exchange integrals, like of course in the two-electron case. We have this table shows the evolution of for our approximations of the lambda matrix. We see we have introduced up to now three different approximations for lambda, which leads to three different natural beta functional. The last one, we call the penalty free, is the for the moment the best one. So now I will show our last results obtained with this penalty free. In this table, we show the total energy for the ground state of the second round elements. We have included the four comparison, a very high rate value obtained with the copper processing, the double and triple methods. And we have used the correlation consistent into the balanced basis set, including polarization of the diffuse functions. And we have also included here values estimated by Chakraborty and Vivane and Davidson, which are very high, very accurate values as benchmark data. Inspection of this table reveals that our functional give values of the energy very close to this highly accurate value obtained with the Angular method. And it's interesting that all these values are both from below by the benchmark data. I have to say that we have to be careful with the pair of three, because sometimes the F level is said to degenerate with the levels above it. That is the case, for example, for the oxygen atom. And in this case, we have to change our approximation for the P matrix, for the pi matrix, as only the product of the occupational number, in order to avoid collapsing to spurious solutions. I will return and we'll come back to this issue in a few slides, and we will see what happens with penalty free when the number of electrons deviate strongly from 0 and 1, when we have a near degeneracy effect. Now, in this table, we show the total and atomization energy for a selected set of small molecules. Again, we have included some value from this value from the copper process in the double triple for comparison and experimental values. Note that the energy here are in headrest and the atomization energies are in kelvin mode. And the basis used as the triple set of basis set, including polarizations. We see that the agreement is quite remarkable, and the values of the parent free and the copper process are very close, and the value for optimization energy are also very close to the experimental ones. Now, let's move to one of the main tasks of the computational chemistry, the description of the profile of the potential and energy surface corresponding to chemical reaction. This implies accurate predictions of the isomerization energy and of the atomization barriers, which is very difficult issue in potential and energy surface, which are very sensible to the electron correlation that this one, isomerization reaction for Bo lithium to lithium Bo. We have calculated, we have optimized the geometry at the copper processing global level using the triple balance set and basis set. We include polarization, and using this geometry, we have made a calculation for the half 4 point 3 a copper cluster for the distance. But the important thing here is that this reaction has a large charge transfer between the species, and we can describe this reaction hace un interaction of the lithium positive ion with a lithium negatively charged pieces. And we need very small, very little energy to move for moving the lithium cation around the lithium species. This conduct to this kind of region, we see a flat potential electricity space between the 0 and 60 degree that can be only well described at a very high level of theory. And we see that panel 3 is able to reproduce this fixture. This is another kind of reaction, very similar to the previous one. This is the solid isomerization reaction for the same one, CN lithium to lithium Zn. And this reaction corresponds to a two-step process with three closed energy isomers and very small barriers, only of 1.5 kcal per mole and 5.8 kcal per mole. And I have to say that the performance of panel 3 here is outstanding. The difference lies within only 0.2 kcal per mole. Okay, what happened with panel 3 when we analyze dissociations? Here I show the dissociation curve for the lithium 2 molecule and calculated with a strict half fold copper cluster, single dose and triple and panel 3. This molecule has a weak covalent bond with a homolithium dissociation limited, and we see that panel 3 in green here behaves very correctly in the equilibrium region, but it fails at the dissociation limit. There is some physical lowering of at the dissociation limit of the energy. Why? Well, this behavior can trace back to the fulfillment of the G condition. The panel 3 satisfies the DM precondition, but it fails at the G condition. At the equilibrium region, for example, the maximum violation of the G condition is about 0.02, this negative value, very small value. But at larger distance, for example, at 7 angstroms, we see here already minus 0.7. This is the source of this unphysical lowering at the dissociation limit. The question is, can we fix this problem? And the answer is yes. Yes, we can. How? Well, let's analyze the G condition. G condition, the alpha beta component of the G matrix, affords these two eigenvalues. And if we want to satisfy the G conditions, enforcing this inequality, we have to satisfy this inequality using both the pi matrix and the delta matrix. Interesting is that if providing that the delta matrix is approximately equal to 0, then the pi matrix can be expressed like this product, and this is the original Martin Cooper Schiffer approximation of the Hadley-Fock-Balaguer approximation. So our reconstruction reduced to the base CS case when the delta becomes 0. But of course, this will broke the energy representability. So let's use our expression for the delta matrix, and then we can obtain this expression for the maximum value of the pi matrix. This is obtained after some tedious algorithm, but the important thing is that we can now further approximate, this will be our new approximation for the pi matrix as this maximum value. And the sign can be obtained if we keep the sign convention for obtaining already for the two electron case. This is again the previous curve for the dissociation curve of for the dissociation of the lithium 2 molecule, and now we have included the panel 4 curve. This is the black continuous line, and we see that our solve is okay. Now the panel 4 behaves correctly in the equilibrium region and also correctly at the dissociation limits. So panel 4 describes substantially better process with more large deviation of the occupation number from 0 and 1. We have extended, we have extended our analysis of the performance of panel 4 to these 6 molecules. We see now these 6 molecules comprise a very different type of bonds, from the prototypical H2 bond, covalent bond, up to the highly isostatic bond of the lithium H. We have also different covalent bonds with different polarity, and we have introduced here also the multiple bond for the CO molecule, and a recovered bond of the molecule leaching tumor previously analyzed. In all cases, the dissociation limit implies an homolytic clear of the bone, so high degree of near degeneracy at the dissociation asymptote. I'm now showing here in this table the properties related to the previous curve. The equilibrium bonds, length, the dissociation energy, the harmonic irrational frequencies, and the anharmonicity constant. We see that our PNO4 describes pretty well all the curves. We have obtained very close result to the experimental values. The average error, for example, for the equilibrium bond length is very small, only 0.7%. For the dissociation energy, about 5%. For the harmonic irrational frequency, 2.8%. And this shows, of course, the quality of the curves we have obtained with the new approximation for the paramatrix. We have also included the anharmonicity constant, which is a very sensible magnitude. The error here is larger, about 21%. But I have to say we have obtained the right order for this magnitude from the leaching 2 to the H2 molecule. Okay, to finalize this talk, I want to summarize some important points. Different properties have been calculated with unprecedented accuracy for the National Orbital Functional Theory, showing a promising performance. The analysis of isomerization reactions and dissociation allows us to conclude that our National Orbital Functional can describe the correct topology of difficult potential energy surface, remarking the significant advance made by the National Orbital Functional. And besides, we have found that the inner representability positive conditions play a crucial role towards achieving chemical accuracy in the National Orbital Functional Theory. I would like to thank Professor Ugarte, Professor Lopez, and Dr. Machain for the useful comments. They are also powerful of these results. I would like to thank also the organizer for this invitation, and thank you for your attention.
I don't have a question, I have a comment. I have to admit that you presented very impressive results for atoms and diatomics, but I'm afraid that you are going to see many failures in practical applications of your approach. And the reason is that in your expressions for delta and also for pi, made it in your fourth version of the approach, you have expressions for involving SF, which are in denominators, in square roots, and so on, and that kills size consistency immediately.
It's very nice. There's something I don't understand. Some of your conditions are based on orbitals being below or above the Fermi energy, but natural orbitals have no energy associated with them. So how, if I give you a natural orbital, how do you know if it is above or below the Fermi energy?
Well, when I talk about the Fermi energy, well, you can associate the Fermi energy with the chemical potential, of course. It's one thing. On the other hand, we all the time take the Fermi level here is like a homo in the Hadley Fock approximation. So,
you count the orbitals up to.
I have to organize the orbitals in the increasing or decreasing orbit of the occupation number. And I keep the same convention sign like in the H2 molecule.
Yeah, but that, okay, so okay. So you, okay, all right, thanks.
Okay, we can discuss it. Okay.
There's one more question.
Maybe it's automatic and I didn't notice because it went a little bit too fast, but if I think of the previous lecture, what happens if you do calculations for fractional numbers of electrons?
Fractional number of electrons. Do you mean a molecule with a fractional number of electrons?
I mean just like in the previous talk, when we saw the DFT approach.
I don't know how to answer this question. But we have fractional occupation number, but no fractional charge or fractional spin.
Yes, but if you would make this kind of plot as in the previous talk, where you go from different integer occupancies, and you want to have curves in between different integer occupancies, what happens there? So just like in the previous talk.
have to say.
Now, one more question.
Yeah, I think the same question is, what do you get for H2 plus, stretched H2 plus?
H2 plus, but I have never tried. You see, my approximation based on the H2 molecule. I have never tried with the lesser number of electrons, meaning with only one electron. But let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's the
question. I don't know.
I just want to add to Patrick's comment. The condition that Paula represents for the fractional spin, fractional charge, those conditions for density functional theory should also be valid for density matrix functional, for the first order density matrix functional. So your functional, you only need to relax instead of integrate to integer number relaxing, integrate to fractional, it should satisfy exactly the same condition.
Continue the discussion with the errors. We should move to the rest of the discussion.